Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's broadcast. Glad to have you tuned in. I'm Neil Statham. This is Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls and Carissa's at the phones. We're looking forward to a good hour again today. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together. Tez, we're thinking about what this week might be like in terms of guests and topics leading up to Valentine's Day. Well, you know, one of the big drivers today in society is social media.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, you know, maybe it's not so much about, you know, romance with the candy and chocolates or and flowers and all that, but everybody's sort of friending everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. And sharing much more than they should probably
in
some cases.
That's right. So we'll talk about maybe your Facebook friends. Are your Facebook friends really your friends? And we'll see if we can get an answer to that question. And that's why you're such an important part of the program today, because, of course, I'm still driving the horse and buggy and trying to, you know.
I just edited some audio with Walt, Dr. Walt Mueller, I think it was, who was talking about how the older generation are internet and technology pioneers.
Yeah.
And the others are or immigrants, rather. And then the kids, the next generation, are more natives.
Yeah, that's so, right. We're going to tell you if you're, and, you know, there are people of all ages are using social media. I mean, it's everywhere and so many platforms, different ways to get connected. So we do want to talk about today, what is social media doing to our life, maybe our social life in general. By the way, we, of course, use social media here at Faith Radio, and love to have you check us out. MyFaithRadio.com is our website, and we're also on Facebook, just Faith Radio. Go to Facebook and search Faith Radio, and you can connect with us that way. And by the way, if you're new to Faith Radio, we've got a welcome packet. Love to send that your way as well. You can sign up online at myfaithradio.com, and we'll send you some old school stuff like a CD.
Some artifacts.
Something you can put up with your little spoon collection or something like that. Maybe. Let's get into today's topic. Looking forward to welcoming back a friend we visited with a few years ago. Actually, his little book came out a couple of years back from Moody. It's called Unfriend Yourself, 3 Days to Detox, Discern, and Decide About Social Media. Kyle Tennant, who is now Connections Pastor at First Church in Warren, Ohio. And he and his wife, Stephanie, live in a house absent of children and pets, he says, except for the dozens of house spiders that he kills on a regular basis. And he's a Moody grad and has written this great book called Unfriend Yourself. And we want to talk about the connection and social media. And Kyle, welcome back, first of all, to Connecting Faith. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, it's a lot of fun to be here.
You start out in this little book, and we do have some copies to give away, by the way. This is just a nice little resource. It won't take you long to read it at all. In fact, sort of the point. It's kind of a 3-day journey. In fact, that's really what you recommend, right, Kyle, that this would be kind of as a weekend retreat sort of thing.
Yeah, it's never a bad idea to unplug. And I had never done it before writing the book, and when I was writing it, I thought, maybe I should do this. And it's hard, but I think it's valuable because it puts some important things in perspective.
We're going to talk a little bit about how you can do that, 3 days to detox, discern, and decide about social media. But Kyle, you tell just how you sort of first got exposed to social media as a prospective student when you were getting ready to go to Moody. And it seemed like social media was going to be the great thing, but tell us a little bit about what happened in that experience.
Yeah, this was back in the summer of 2007 when I was slowly packing my things to head off to Moody as a young freshman, and that just seems like so many years ago, but it wasn't, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. And so that whole summer, some of the incoming freshmen kind of got involved in a Facebook group, and so we started sharing and just talking about this and chatting and about all sorts of things, about our lives, about our hopes for Moody and all of these kinds of things. And so I was really excited about it because I thought, oh, my gosh, look at all this progress that we've made friendship-wise. Before we've even stepped on campus, I've always been an overachiever. So it obviously scratched an itch that I had already. And so we got on campus, and the most unique thing happened. I thought to myself, I saw a person that we had been talking on Facebook for months now. I saw them across campus, and they walked toward me, and I thought, I don't know what to do right now. am I supposed to introduce myself like I've never met them before? Am I supposed to hug them because we're really good friends? And that was probably one of the first times that I began to realize there was a disconnect between what was happening online and what was happening in real life. And, you know, fast forward to when I graduated and 4 years later, none of the people that I was really, really quote unquote close with on Facebook before coming into Moody were the people that were my closest friends when I left. Now, part of that is just the way life goes. People, you know, get in different friends groups and you have different majors and you're doing different things. But I did think it was striking that these, you know, relationships that we were also excited and thought we had built and so much trust in all of these things just ended up kind of fizzling there after a while. And so I think that was the first time I thought, maybe this isn't everything it's saying it is.
Yeah. So are we asked the question, are our Facebook friends really friends?
You know, I think they are in a sense. They are in a sense in that, you know, a few weeks ago, just for example, my grandmother passed away, and that was the first time I'd ever lost somebody in my family. And so my Facebook friends were, you know, sharing, you know, consoling words, we're praying for you, those kinds of things. And you do appreciate that, you know, when people are going through hard things. And it is a useful way to stay in touch with, you know, now that we live in Northeast Ohio, with friends back in Illinois and now in out west and the West Coast and all over the country and all over the world. It's a handy way of staying in touch with our missionary friends. And yet at the same time, you know, the people that we're living our life with on a day-to-day basis, the people that we see most, you know, there's a difference between those relationships and my quote Facebook friends. Are they my friends? Sure, but it's certainly a different kind of friendship, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Talking about the book Unfriend Yourself, 3 days to Detox, Discern, and Decide About Social Media. And we've got some copies to give away. I'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Maybe this is an area where you've been kind of wondering about, or maybe wondering about, you know, for your kids in terms of their use or, you know, time spent and or, you know, experiences that you've had, maybe good or bad with it. You're welcome to join us. Sign up for a copy of the book at 877-93-FAITH. We're a queue up for our conversation online as well. It's myfaithradio.com, and you can go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. We're kind of old school that way, I guess. But you can send us a note or give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. Kyle, I was thinking, since you wrote the book, it's been a couple of years since you wrote the book, and mm-hmm. you know, in that time, it seems like there's whole new waves of social media burst on the scene. What's your assessment of how this technology has changed over what it was even just a couple of years ago?
Well, I think what's interesting is that overall, Facebook is becoming the platform for people over 45, just generally speaking, as people under 45 are moving toward things like Instagram and Snapchat and Tumblr. And that's not entirely the case where I live. Northeast Ohio lives in a time warp about 6 years behind the rest of the country. And so we're still rocking Facebook like it's 2009. But okay. I think what has changed has been and I don't know if this is the best way to say it necessarily, but it seems like it's changed to social media in which I am more selective about who is following me and who I am following. And so on Instagram, I sense that people are a little more specific about who they follow and why and what they want to see. And Snapchat is kind of a glorified version of picture texting back and forth. And so in that sense, you know, when the founder of Snapchat kind of did it, it was his idea to make it a little more personal and lifelike. But I think there's been some hidden costs with even that specific platform over the last few years, too. All you have to think about is, you know, a hormonal teenager with a picture that disappears off their phone once they look at it, you know, and it admits and pretty quickly leads to some bad stuff. And so it has changed in some dramatic ways. And yet, oddly, Facebook does still seem to kind of keep hanging on.
Well, maybe we should talk about, you know, some of those concerns, because we have some assumptions about technology use and social media, and you address them. You know, we'll maybe just take them one at a time, that it's amoral, that there's, you know, it's neither good nor bad.
Yeah, I think I'm really indebted to Neil Postman on this when he writes about the medium is the message. And really at its heart, and we kind of address this in some of the other assumptions too in the book, that social media is ultimately about promoting yourself. And even if you are promoting, you know, pictures of like flowers with encouraging words on them, which it seems like half of my Facebook feed is filled with anymore, it's still kind of this self-presentation and this, you know, you're kind of playing on Facebook's terms when you're kind of using their stuff. And so I think we need to be aware of the agendas that social media has. It's not just purely so that I can connect with my people. I mean, anymore, Facebook is becoming a major marketing tool. And so, and we actually use it all the time for our church for marketing and those purposes too. So that's been an interesting shift even in my philosophy of ministry over the last couple of years. But yeah, it is not amoral. It has an agenda. And when you're using it, it has its agenda. And its agenda is to promote you. And so the question is it beneficial for a follower of Jesus to be so engaged in self-promotion?
Well, maybe along that line, then, you know, we have things like approval addiction. I mean, that that's a reality for some people, right?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, in a few books that I've read, one of them being Alone Together, which is just a wonderful, wonderful book written by an MIT professor, she makes even this comment about adolescents not knowing what to feel until someone tells them what to feel in response to their Facebook posts. So they'll text or tweet or post, you know, this happened to me. And then they don't know how to feel until their friends say, oh, it's so sad. I mean, and we do. We get frustrated when people aren't looking at our posts, and we get frustrated when people kind of get combative on there. And so it is an approval addiction. And I think we all want approval, and I think God designed us to need approval from Him. But I think Facebook maybe scratches that itch to get it from more people than we really need to in some ways that aren't helpful all the time.
We're going to continue our conversation in a minute with Kyle Tennant. Kyle's Connections pastor at First Church in Warren, Ohio, graduate of Moody Bible Institute, and pursuing an MA in theology, and has written a great little book called Unfriend Yourself, 3 Days to Detox, Discern, and Decide About Social Media. We're talking about social media use today, and I'd love to have you join the conversation. If you have a question or a comment, 877-93-FAITH is the number, 877-933-2484. We talked about some of those basic assumptions that, you know, it's okay to be about me. That's one of those. Well, I want to talk about the assumption about community, that community is anywhere. Is that true? We'll get Kyle's perspective coming up in a minute. Stay tuned. Past the hour, talking with Kyle Tennant today. Kyle's a Moody grad and also graduated from Wheaton College Graduate School with a BA in the pastoral, MA in the Christian Formation Ministry. He's serving as Connections Pastor, First Church in Warren, Ohio, as a youth pastor before that. So he's a social media user, and also talks about it as how they can use it in their church, and we'll get into that in a little bit as well. But Kyle, one of the a couple of the other assumptions that we talk about, or that you address in your book, Unfriend Yourself, is that community is anywhere, and that sort of nowhere is somewhere. Talk about those assumptions and what some of the challenges are with those.
I think it's been interesting to watch how social media kind of tells us that our bodies don't matter, that I can be intimately connected with people anywhere I am and anywhere they are. And I think it's interesting, Sky Jathani, who wrote a great book called With, and I just really appreciate the way he thinks. His point is, especially as the people of Jesus, we should be the people that are most uncomfortable with that when we think about how Jesus came to us in a body. And so we need to remember that our bodies matter, where we are matters. And, you know, I often think of this lately in terms of my dining room table. We have a dining room table that was actually my wife's great-grandparents, so it's been in her family for a long time. And some of the best conversations that I've had in the last year and a half, some of the most transformative moments of my life have been around that table. And when we and so there's something important about that place. There's something important about that time. And there's something important about not being distracted. There's something important about being focused on these 6 or 8 people around this table with me as we have this conversation about things that really matter. And social media kind of wants to cut out the middleman, right? Yeah. We don't need the table. We don't need the people. Here's all of your people. Here's what you can just write about it and go. And I think we lose something in that. There's something dangerous when we walk away from our bodies and just kind of exist out in the world of the internet. And I think one of the things we really miss is our joy. You know, at the end of 2 John, John even says, I have a lot to say to you, but I'm not going to do it in pen and ink. I'm going to wait till I come and see you face to face so that our joy may be full. So maybe we're sacrificing some joy on the altar of you know, immediacy when we kind of get rid of our places and spaces.
You talk about the distinction between communication and communion. I thought that was worth kind of just camping on those words a little bit.
You know, I think I think it's a good way of difference. You know, I have a job where I'm constantly communicating. You know, I'm communicating from up front when I preach, and I'm communicating via emails and text messages and in meetings and in discipleship conversations. And yet every once in a while, again, maybe around my dinner table or in one of those conversations over coffee in a disciple-making setting, or something just shifts, and all of a sudden we're really speaking on a level of the soul, and we're really getting deep. And I think social media, because it's, you know, here's 800 friends and all of these things that you can comment and all you post on, it moves so fast, whereas, you know, communion just really takes a lot of time and a slowness and a patience. And it's communion that grows us, and it's communion that Christ calls us to with himself and with our brothers and sisters. And so communication is important. We need to be communicating all the time. And, you know, like I said a few minutes ago, I get good communication on my social media, but I've never communed with anybody over social media. I've communed with people around my table. I've communed with people over coffee. I've communed with people in a small group setting because we stopped and we took time. And I think we're missing out on something when we're just kind of engaging in the back and forth communication and not slowing down and really seeing each other.
So network and community aren't the same thing, are they?
No, they're not. Networks are almost more utilitarian, you know, and as now part of a larger denomination, I'm in a network of hundreds of churches. I'm only in really good communion with one or two as we work together in our city and in discipling people and in reaching them. And so networks get things done in certain ways, but community also shapes us in important ways that networks can't. And I think we're kind of losing the sense of those difference between a friend and, for lack of a better word, a contact in our phones when we kind of confuse those two terms. And so I'd really love to see us kind of reclaim what community is. And I think we're taking some big steps, if only because, you know, community may be the buzziest buzzword in Christianity and, you know, in this decade. So, but I think social media is not always helping us in that.
Well, you are a connections pastor now. That's your responsibility. So, you know, you're about community and mm-hmm. And communion. And I know that you had as sort of an original project that launched this book. It was a thesis paper on the church and social media. So are the underlying questions still the same? I mean, how should the church or should the church use social media?
I think they are, and I think there's been moments of, you know, I'm not only a connections pastor at one church, we're also planting another. And so we're using social media all the time. And so there's been these moments where I have to step back and think, am I like totally going back on everything that I've ever thought about this? But what we've found is if you want to go where people are, they really are on social media. And so we've found advertising through social media and developing good Facebook pages as an important springboard to get people interested in what we're doing and to give them some, you know, to connect them with some truth and some encouragement throughout the week. And so I do think, yes, I think now I would say churches should be using social media, but only as a way to be sharing information, to be maybe casting vision a little bit for what's going on in that community of believers. But I'm not sure, you know, developing a church social media site where this is the place that we're now doing, you know, all our community is the answer. And that's what's interesting is, you know, a lot of churches on the bigger scale of things are doing online campuses and all of those kinds of things. And so what does that do? And, you know, I don't know. I'm just a little church planner here in Northeast Ohio, you know.
Have you worked through maybe just as your leadership team or maybe board or just among friends, maybe fellow pastors say, if I was going to put together some guidelines, here's some things that, you know, I want to have some framework around this. What would those be?
Yeah, I think as I've talked with some friends and some, you know, as those words we used earlier in the broadcast, those digital natives, as we've kind of thought through those things, I think it really has come down to, for us and for me and for those that I'm closest with, that, you know, our Facebook pages and our Twitter feeds and our Instagram feeds for our churches are really some great ways to share some information. Like I said, to cast vision, to give a glimpse of what you're missing when you're not there. But it's never really even as good as an in-person contact. It's never even as good as any of that. A lot of what I've been doing over the last years, we've been planting this new church, has been spending a lot of time in like Starbucks and other places around our community and trying to just meet people that are unchurched and meet people that are far from God. And those relationships, there's the buzzword, have been more fruitful than any Facebook post that we've ever put up or any money we've spent on Facebook ads. They're still important. They're still important to let your community know, hey, we're here. This is what we're doing. But again, you even walk into those realms of how much are we self-promoting and how much are we sharing? And it's muddy. It is muddy, muddy stuff.
Well,
but I think we find it fruitful over time.
You're talking about going to Starbucks, I'm wondering how do you actually meet people to get them to actually look up from their technology, right? That is one of the issues too. Is just that we're distracted. I mean, if we, you know, what's on our social media or you know what's on our phone or our, yeah. Something is more important than the person that's right in front of us.
I think one of my personal practices as of late has been to not look at not answer my phone unless it's my wife. And that has been helpful for me to be more present, but I have a lot of friends who aren't that way. And it's funny that you say, you know, how do you get people to look up at Starbucks? Because the first time I kind of just went to sit and, you know, try to meet people, you know, I texted my wife after about an hour and I said, I don't know how you do this because nobody is looking at each other, you know? And so how do you kind of engage in a conversation with somebody when they just don't want to, when they have their headphones in and they're just typing away? I think fighting that distraction is an important spiritual discipline in the 21st century of learning how to be fully present with one another. And that's maybe something I didn't even understand when I wrote the book, and I would probably write about a lot more, is how do we say no to distraction and just be present?
Well, even as you described kind of your early experiences, I mean, and even kids today, we don't know how to engage, maybe, do we? I mean, we've sort of lost that element of looking somebody in the eye.
Yeah, we're losing that's exactly it. We're losing the art of looking somebody in the eye. We're losing the art of not monologuing. You know, so I have I engage in a lot of conversations with people that aren't conversations. They're just long Facebook posts verbally, you know? So here's everything that I think about this and everything I do. And so now we're just monologuing back and forth. And so we're losing the ability to just be conversant people. And I think social media is maybe enhancing some of our social ineptness that sometimes we face in all situations.
Talking to Kyle Tennant today. Kyle is a pastor, actually a church planter and a pastor, Connections pastor of First Church in Warren, Ohio, graduate of Moody and Wheaton Graduate School. And he's written a wonderful little resource called Unfriend Yourself, 3 days to detox, discern, and decide about social media. And it really is a place where you could just use this as a little guide for a weekend, or maybe with Lenten season coming up, it's something that you'd like to you'd pass up for Lent or some aspect of this. We're going to talk coming up in a couple of minutes about what does detoxing look like and how do we actually go about this and get some more great insight from Kyle as well. In fact, he's written a recent blog talking a bit about what would we fill our time with away from the digital world, if we actually gave it up, and how would we draw closer to God, or would it make us more holy in our use of it? We'll get to some of those questions and more. If you have a question or a comment, love to have you join the conversation, and you can sign up for a copy of the book. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can drop us a note online, myfaithradio.com, and then just go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, and we'll get to your questions and comments here coming up in just a moment with Kyle Tennant on Connecting Faith.
Twitter, I think I'm a big, big loser. Then I go to my computer, turn it on, and I feel grand, all because of Twitter. Direct message me. Please message me.
It's a little Ingrid Michaelson, who's a pop artist that wrote a song about Twitter, I guess.
Sure. I'm feeling better already. Kyle Tennant is with us today. We're talking about social media and how it affects really every aspect of our culture, it seems like. It's pervasive. We're going to talk a little bit about how we might detox from it for a while and then discern and decide about social media. That's the subtitle of his book, Unfriend Yourself. Kyle's a pastor, church planter, and joining us today. And we're going to jump in. Pam from Eldora, Iowa, listening to Faith 11, 1090, says, I think Facebook is a good way to see where people's boundaries are. In other words, how much they're willing to share or how some overstep those boundaries. What are your thoughts to that, Kyle?
I think that's such a good thing. And I can't help but kind of chuckle a little bit because it's just so true. I think we all have a Facebook friend or somebody on our Twitter feed that they're just an oversharer. Yeah, there's just some things that you don't need to know about. And I think she's right. I think it reveals reveals some maybe lack of social graces, perhaps, or the lack of better word. I hope that's not too strong. That may be already there, and then it gives it a megaphone for everybody to see. And so one of the new features on Facebook is that you don't have to unfriend a person, but you can unfollow them so that you don't have to see it. And there's more than a handful of people that I just don't want to know anymore. And so I think it does say a lot about a person's emotional life and the way they respond to things. It says a lot about a person's relationships and the way they complain about people. I think an interesting phenomenon is when parents complain about their kids on Facebook. Or they post like funny things that I don't think that you think are funny. I think you're just angry, but you're trying to maybe vent some emotions there. So I think she's exactly right. And I think we need to, as always, the ancient wisdom is true. Always think before you speak, or in this case, always think before you click.
Yes.
Because otherwise we may find ourselves saying some things that maybe just didn't need to be said in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I know you've been involved in youth ministry for a few years as well. I mean, are there... What kind of things did you advise your students or your youth groups and stuff when you're working with them, or maybe even parents? What kind of advice would you give in terms of how do they understand that they need to have boundaries in this?
You know, I think one of the things I often saw was stop posting, or often said was stop posting about, especially, you know, teenagers, how hard this was and how much this stinks and how, I mean, obviously much stronger language and really these appeals for pity. Stop that. Stop being needy. And I think that's another thing I often told my teenagers was you're posting a lot of needy stuff. You know, you are looking for that affirmation. You are looking for people to say, oh, don't feel that way, Dad. And you want 27 people to comment and all that kind of stuff. And especially with teenagers, I said, don't put yourself in a position that you're going to be disappointed, because you are. If you need to talk to somebody, call somebody and talk to them and talk about it and have a real conversation. And I think even – and with parents and teenagers too, I think the other thing I often said was don't complain about each other, because you know that we can read that. And so you kind of are watching these family feuds play out a little bit. And so is it wise? Is it helpful? Is it kind? Is it meaningful? Are these are all questions that you kind of need to think through before you post. And oftentimes you're going to find yourself maybe not being as needy or as posting or whatever you need to do.
You know, there's the other, I guess, side of it too, where we assume that or it looks like we care. I think, you know, what do they call it? We'll text a few dollars or something on, just to an organization, but that's as far as we go. We don't really get involved any more than that.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. I follow a feed on Facebook called Humans of New York, and it's gotten a lot of attention over the last couple of weeks. There's a guy that kind of was out of a job and just started walking around every day and taking pictures of New Yorkers and asking them questions, and then he posts this picture and what they're saying, and it's often some of the most striking things. And a few weeks ago, he took a picture of a middle school student, and it kind of turned into this thing where this middle school student said, "This my principal inspires me." So the guy that runs Humans of New York went and interviewed the principal and went to the school and then started a GoFundMe thing online. And they've raised like millions upon millions of dollars for this school. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And on the one hand, you know, it is maybe encouraging that I'm not going to get personally involved, but I will click and send $5 or $20 at a time. But on the other hand, you do go, man, if we can really sometimes leverage this appropriately, it can really make a big difference. I mean, there's, you know, a school in this really terrible neighborhood of New York City that's now totally been revolutionized by that. But I do think it also encourages us, again, not to get our hands dirty, not to get involved, because, you know, it's always easier to spend your time than it is to spend your money.
I guess that's...
Excuse me. It's always easier to spend your money than it is to spend your time, so...
Yeah, is that the... I mean, that's, I guess, the question that marketers and researchers and tech people are trying to figure out. How do we leverage it, right? That's been the issue all along. I mean, how do you figure out what actually hits and is popular and sort of gets the buzz, right?
Right, and I think I saw actually somebody even post a joke on my Facebook feed this week, you know, a group of people sitting in a room saying, we're going to make a viral video. Well, nobody ever really made a viral video. Videos just go viral. And so it's a fickle thing, the internet, and I'm sure there's some scientific way out there to manipulate it, but I think it's always up to this mysterious thing. It's just getting the one right person to post it, and before you know it, it just becomes a thing. And I think it's an interesting study in how movements work and how people follow after things when you watch what blows up on Facebook versus what doesn't.
The anonymous caller says, my sister says she doesn't have time to talk on the phone, but yet she's always posting stuff on social media. It's frustrating to me.
Yeah, that would be frustrating to me, too. An anonymous caller, my friend, you just maybe need to go over there and take that phone out of her hand and talk to her or whatever it is, because I think that is the thing. We don't realize how much time we spend on our social media. And so that's why even sometimes giving it up for Lent might be a scary thing, or even detoxing for a short amount of time might be scary, because you're going to suddenly realize, I spent so much time on this thing.
Well, let's talk about why does maybe detoxing need to come first, and what does that actually look like? And maybe just talk about how you set up your book as kind of a little 3-day fast, if you will, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think detoxing is almost the same with social media as those who work with people in addictions. I mean, it really is separating them from the source. And so I've heard of a lot of people do it a lot of different ways. They'll delete the apps off their phones and not go on their computers, or they'll, you know, there's a million different ways that you can do it. You know, not touch my phone or my computer for 3 days. I mean, there's a variety of ways to do it and a variety of intensities to do it at, I suppose. I think the detoxing needs to come first, because we need to get it out before we can really look at it meaningfully. I mean, we just don't know the power something has in our life until maybe it's not quite there anymore, or that we can kind of separate ourselves from it. And I think that detoxing, I've had friends talk about, you know, they and readers of the book say, I felt an enormous amount of anxiety that I could not go on and click that I, you know, was riding in a car and had, or, you know, was waiting for the bus, and I couldn't just pull up my Facebook feed to pass the time. And so I think the detoxing helps us kind of get it out, so that we can maybe start to evaluate, man, what is this doing to me? And honestly, how am I using my time? Because it can also become a big time waster.
Have you found, is there maybe a demographic or a psychographic sector of society that's more prone to maybe misusing this? Or is it just, all age and status groups?
You know, I think there was a time in which I would have said, oh, yeah, young people are and older people aren't. And I'm beginning to think that's not true. I think everybody that's on social media is misusing it. And I think what changes is the way. And so maybe whereas a younger person is going to use it maybe in some attention-seeking ways that aren't good, or in some emotional validation ways that aren't good, I'm finding that people that are older, those maybe over 45 crowds, are using it to be very combative, to be very angry about their opinions. I call them, you know, in my circles, the Fox News sharers. Those are some of the people that I've unfollowed, because they're just constantly posting this Fox News story and this Fox News story and this conspiracy and this thing. And so I think there's ways to misuse it. But I think one of the ways that I've become aware of, even since writing the book, is how Christians of all ages have started using it almost, yeah, for lack of a better word, combatively, having fights on Facebook about, you know, whether that's politics or theology or current events. And it gets ugly very quickly.
Well, so follow up a little bit on that. So how do we engage in dialogue and civil debate on, something like Facebook? And are there some warnings that you'd recommend? I mean, because that was a pretty bold statement. You said everyone is misusing it. I thought, well, wow, that pretty much includes everyone, I guess, doesn't it?
I was going to say, my wife would tell you I'm quite prone to overstatement,
okay,
so maybe
right.
I shouldn't generalize as much as I do. But I do seem to see a fair number of Christians, I'll back it up a little bit, yeah, using it combatively. And sometimes, I mean, to me, the amount of stuff that I post is very, very limited. The amount of things that are related to my opinions about things, I don't post. If I read a blog post that I think maybe it either is incendiary or maybe would be offensive to some people that I know, I don't post it. And I think Facebook is maybe in that sense becoming a place where you become more combative. And I think that's partially because when you're in a conversation about something you disagree with person to person, face to face, there's some social restrictions that you feel by looking at them in the face. You're going to know to control your tone, I hope. You know, you're going to know to maybe choose your words more carefully. And when we're kind of, again, disembodied, when we kind of just are out there in the nether regions, I think we begin to lose some of that tact. We begin to lose some of that respect. And so all of those things that we know that are good about handling conversations, you know, not starting sentences with you or not name calling, kind of start to unravel very quickly on Facebook. And I have seen adults that I, you know, actually really respect say some things that I just found were very, very inappropriate. And maybe, you know, I think the events that happened down in Ferguson and then in Cleveland near me really kind of brought that up. Maybe even in my community, there's a pretty sharp black-white divide in our community. And so seeing various people post that, I mean, there was a lot of offensive things being said and posted around that time that disappointed me because they were coming from the mouths of people that love Jesus. And so I think, honestly, sometimes I think the best way is not to post those things. But if you're going to, maybe to calm yourself down and not be accusatory or dismissive of people's opinions, but to really try to listen, or in this case, read carefully before you post.
Well, I guess it's like you said earlier, I mean, that it's all monologue. And, you know, when you're face to face, you're sort of forced to dialogue, but, you know, if you're going to continue it for any length of time. And so there's give and take, where even if it's immediate back and forth, it's still not the same, is it?
Well, and I think, and this is maybe pointing to a larger issue for me, but I'm tired of living in a country where I can't be in the same room with somebody I disagree with. And I'm tired of kind of that we're losing the art of having civil conversation anymore. And I think you're onto something. When we lose the give and take, it becomes these kind of, I call them opinion grenades. Here's my opinion about this issue, and I'm just going to lob it over the wall and kind of plug my ears. And then I'm going to, oh, well, I just got blown out. Okay, I'm going to do that back to you. And so no longer are we really listening or trying to learn. And part of the internet is such that we can kind of always just go out and find something that matches our opinions. We don't always have to find something that challenges it too much. And I do think that's a detrimental thing. And so we start only liking the pages that agree with us and surrounding ourselves with people that agree instead of being able to engage in some good discourse. And so I think that's been disappointing. So I just really want to see us, how do we embody the fruit of the Spirit when we're talking with people that we're disagreeing with on Facebook, I think is a big challenge for us in the coming years.
And we could probably expand that to pretty much life in general. How do we embody
absolutely
the fruit of the Spirit?
That might, absolutely.
You might even be able to preach on that, Kyle. I'm not saying that you have to, you know.
I'll write that down.
Sure, yeah. And check with your wife, because she would know.
Yeah, sure. I'll make sure to do that first, yeah.
877-93-FAITH is our phone number, 877-933-2484. Got some copies of Kyle Tennant's book, Unfriend Yourself, to give away. We'll do that at a drawing at the end of the show. We got a couple of callers with some questions that they left about advice for parents, so we'll get Kyle's perspective on that. Kyle's a pastor, Connections pastor at First Church in Warren, Ohio. He's part of a church plant as well, and has written the book Unfriend Yourself, 3 days to Detox, Discern, and Decide about Social Media. It's published by Moody Press, and we'll get more with Kyle coming up in a moment. Tell you click unlike, right? So no, what was it Kyle said? You don't have to unfriend them now. You can just say not follow. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So we can let them down gently. They don't have to know that we're not friends. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. All right.
Ted just gets about 5,000 likes from me.
Yeah.
This morning, really great musical choices during this hour. This has just been a lot of fun.
Well,
I want to go back to commercial again just to see what he does.
Sure, I know. That's you and most of the listeners actually said, you know, when's Ted going to do the next bumper?
Right.
That could be. All right. So, Kyle Tennant is a connection pastor at First Church in Warren, Ohio, and he's also a church planter, and he's written a great little resource called Unfriend Yourself, 3 days to Detox, Discern, and Decide about Social Media. We're talking about Facebook, social media, those things. Marla, listening in at Faith 1190 in Madison, asked a question. She said, what are some ways that we can teach our kids about healthy communication?
Well, that's just such a fabulous question. I think from early on, we just need to be teaching our kids those basic things. And I mean, when I was growing up, I was just forced to learn. When you see an adult, you say hi, you look them in the eye, you shake their hands. I think it's important to continually reinforce that. But anymore, the other discipline that we need to be teaching our kids is how to put the phone down. So how do we get our kids to unplug for a minute, to when the grandparents are at the table, to look up? I think a really wonderful example of this, and I honestly meant to look it up and before we got on the broadcast, but a few years ago, a mom kind of, I think on the Huffington Post, they picked it up, kind of wrote a contract with her child about when he or she was given a phone. And she just did some wonderful things about, you know, if you do this, we're going to take it away. If you do this, we're going to take it away. You know, this is always the priority. Don't text people, call them. And I think kind of having a conversation with our kids and having follow-up conversation with our kids about how we're using our phones is really, really important. When I learned to drive, I had all these rules I had to follow. You know, don't have this many passengers, and you're not allowed to drive after this time, and all those kinds of things. But we don't have those same kind of rules when we give our kids phones. It's still a dangerous piece of technology. So kind of having those conversations with our kids and reflecting with them about their social stuff is going to really, really help in that direction.
Well, it kind of ties in because Lois had left us a question as well. She said, what should we do as parents if we're in disagreement about if our kids should be using a cell phone or not for a 12-year-old?
Yeah, and this is one of those moments where let's be clear about one thing. I don't have children, so I'm kind of, you know, making this statement, and who knows what kind of device they'll have for our children if, you know, when they turn 12 or 13,
sure.
You know, and kind of terrifies me to think about it for too long, but...
Well,
at
this point, you can share a pretty well-reasoned philosophy until you have kids of your own, right?
So right, right. Until I have kids of my own, the book is great. And then when we have them, who knows what book I would write, you know? But I do kind of think, I've never seen a reason why a 12-year-old needs one. If only anymore because their friend probably has one. So the argument of what if I really need to call you doesn't even work because their best friend probably has one anyway, you know? I just think you really need to have a conversation with your kids about why do they feel they need it, why do they want it, and then even then, at 13, do they need an iPhone? Probably not. They could probably just get away with an old track phone. But that said, those are even getting, you know, not buying a smartphone is getting harder to do too. So I think it's kind of trying to figure out with your child, really, why do you think you want, like, why do we need one, and what purposes would it use? And if we got you one, what would you do with it, and what rules would we set? Because to them... You need to help them. It's a good opportunity to reflect on peer pressure, too. Do you just want one because all your friends have one? You know, let's think about why we want things and why we, you know, all those kinds of things is really important. So conversation, conversation, conversation when there's disagreement, you know, and sometimes the rule is, you know what, until you're 13, that's just what it's going to be.
You know, I think last time we talked, we didn't talk about gaming at all, but that's sort of another, you know, aspect of technology that's, you know, we can spend hours on. Any advice on that? And I'm sure it's, you know, when you're a youth pastor, when you're dealing with kids who are, and parents probably wondering, what do I do on this?
Yeah, and what I'm always struck by, honestly, Neil, is I always find parents that feel powerless. Even thinking of maybe a specific family or two that I worked with, you know, they had kids that were really, I mean, that's all they did. Their kids on a school night would be up till 3 a.m. playing video games. And they would kind of talk to me and kind of just shrug like they didn't know what else to do. And the thought I kept having was, you know, you can like take the machine and hide it. You know, like I think it's, again, setting some boundaries with your kids, being clear about the penalties that happen when they don't live within those boundaries and then, you know, again, then the big word is follow through. And, again, not having kids myself, I don't always know exactly what that feels like all the time. But I think the gaming thing, it really becomes about the boundaries. It just becomes about what are the rules or the homework's done. And until those boundaries are set, you know, and then you just remember as the parent, you've got the power. When my mom, when I was growing up, the word in our house was, I'm the boss, you're the baby. You know? So that's just kind of what it was. And so I think setting those clear expectations is a big help.
Yeah, you know, you never really outgrow that either. I just want to tell you, Kyle. I mean, just...
Sure.
mom's still going to be mom.
I think my mom said it to me a couple months ago.
Yeah, and she'll be pulling that one out for many years to come. So.
Oh, I'm entirely positive that she will.
You know, we joking a little bit before the program, you know, would making Neil Postman's book Required Reading for All Students make a difference in our sort of with our fascination technology? I mean, that really was a classic and pretty insightful.
Well, I think it should be required reading. The question is, do we have the attention spans to finish the book anymore? which is just another terrifying bit of it. But I do think it would be, I think Postman's work raises just some philosophical questions that, again, being digital natives, we just assume it's all good. And sometimes we need to take some time to be intentional to step back and maybe reflect on some of those things. And that's really the value in detoxing and discerning and deciding and using even resources that are not mine, because we just need to sometimes critically look at the stuff that we just take as good and well just out of the gate.
In one of your recent blogs, you asked some questions good questions leading up to Lenten season. One of them was, why are we embarrassed to give up social media? I mean, that is a big barrier for some people, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's interesting because I've even seen, you know, people have posts that are rolling their eyes, kind of, so to speak, about their friends that give up social media. And I don't know why we're embarrassed about it. Is it because we're admitting that it's maybe too much in our lives? It seems silly. But I think there's such great, if Lent really is a season in which we're kind of, you know, at Christmas we sing, let every heart prepare him room. In Lent, we act on that in a unique way. And if we're really trying to make room for God by eliminating some things that have a lot of control in our lives, I guarantee you giving up social media is going to be a lot more formational than giving up chocolate. Because we spend so much more time, you know, if we spend as much time eating chocolate as we did on social media, we'd have even more health problems nationally than we do. And so I don't know why we're embarrassed. I don't think we should be. And if you are embarrassed, then don't tell people that you went off and just disappear for 40 days and figure out everything that happened while you were gone in the meantime.
Well, one of the second questions you ask is, how will you fill the time away from the digital world with God? So let me just say a word about that. Okay, we're setting this aside, but we want to draw closer to God.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think the key to those kinds of things is, you know, especially social media, you're going to free up a whole lot of time. So what are you going to do with that? How can you be generous with your time and energy by serving others? How can you be using that time to spend in the Word or in prayer or in a small group setting? Or what can you take on? Last Lent, this is, you know, maybe, I don't know if this is a giant sin to acknowledge, you know, in Christian radio, but my wife and I do struggle to pray together. We really do. And so last Lent, my wife and I didn't really give anything up. We took on praying together every night. It was great. We fell off by about midsummer, so this year's Lent, we're also taking on praying together again. And so I think we need to choose not only what to give up, but what to take on. And if you look at Scripture, that's always the message Paul is giving everybody else. You know, flee these things, but do these things. You know, take off, you know, malice and hate, but put on love and gentleness. And so there's always got to be a, not necessarily a balance, but a putting off and a putting on. So what you put on in the place of social media is just going to be just as important.
And I'm sure as you've experienced it, maybe doing detoxing from time to time on social media, or just, you know, even just as a Lenten experiment, that you do come out the other side and have a better perspective, more discerning at least.
Absolutely. Anytime that we get rid of something, we begin to see it differently. And that's the case if you lose 20 pounds or you decide to, declutter your house, or if you get rid of social media, you suddenly see, like, oh, I feel a lot better now that I've lost that weight. Oh, I didn't really need all that stuff. Or, oh, you know what? I don't need to be as connected as I think I need to be. And so I think, again, there's something about just giving something up. And when we kind of emotionally and even sometimes physically distance ourselves from it, all of a sudden we see, oh, like I really understand that. I see how that, you know, I see how that was forming me. I was really anxious when I couldn't get on social media. So evidently I'm not dealing with my anxiety appropriately. You just start to think differently in key ways. And so I think that the detoxing thing has to come first, because you're not going to be able to discern properly, as you said.
The book is called Unfriend Yourself, 3 days to Detox, Discern, and Decide About Social Media. Just a short little book. And, you know, given today's attention spans, that's probably about all you could handle. You know,
that's right.
Put down the media, read the book. You'll be blessed by it. And Kyle, I know that you do a little writing online occasionally, write a blog. So.
Yeah, I blog at kyletennant.com in extreme spurts.
Okay.
So I have a spurt coming, I think. There's been some things I've been wanting to write about. So that may be the blogs that you read for 2015
okay. All
for
right.
me.
Well,
but
if people, you know, if people are looking for something to do when they're not on Facebook, they could check
that's
it
right,
out.
That's so, right. Come on over to my website.
Kyle Tennant joining us today. Kyle is Connections pastor at First Church in Warren, Ohio, and he is a church planter, author of the book Unfriend Yourself, with us today on Connecting Faith. Kyle, great to visit with you. Thanks so much for your good insight and some good reflection today.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
If you missed part of today's broadcast or want to pass it on to a friend, of course, it's all shareable. We put the podcast up on our website. It's myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page.